The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News.
So you have to give a speech at a forthcoming wedding or a stag party or even at work. Are you worried or anxious about it? Well, our Monday expert is Owen Thomas McDermott, Managing Director of the Communications Clinic, and he's with me now in studio. Owen, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Some speeches are, you know, set pieces. They could be the annual results, and some pieces, you know, some are more informal. But people can be universally terrified of the process.
Universally terrified. I think there has been studies into what do people fear most, and the public speaking comes up top, even ahead of dying. So that's quite an extreme view of it, but that actually people don't look forward to it. I think at the root of any good piece of public speaking has to be who you're talking to and who's the audience. So if it happens to be, for example, at a wedding, or if it happens to be at the end of the annual results, for example, they are different recipients, but that the root of the communication has to be at who you're talking to.
I mean, if you listen to things like the financial news, most people, they don't even listen to it because they've no interest. But there are people out there who are acutely interested in what they're about to hear. And they don't really care whether it's delivered in a boring fashion or they want the facts.
Well, they'll also find it interesting, you see. And I think that, again, has to be the criteria for assessment of the root of the who is the recipient and who is the audience. Is it interesting? Is it understandable? And is it memorable? Because if it's not interesting to them or not relevant, well, then they're not really listening. If they don't understand it, well, then they don't get it. But ultimately, if it's not memorable, then what's the point? And that's actually a very useful criteria to look at when preparing your own speech, for example, or preparing your own input at a meeting or at a job interview. That criteria works through. Is it relevant to them? Do they get it? And then can they remember it?
Now, if you're making some sort of a speech and you might have the help of a laptop and effectively slides on screen, are there any tips, any rules about this? Because one of the things I hate is when someone is actually reading the slide, because I read it silently in about 10 seconds. And they go through the slide and it takes them 2 minutes to go through the slide.
Well, this is it. I think I've spent a lot of my career, Pat, trying to get people to stop using PowerPoint because they tend to misuse it and abuse it. PowerPoint and other visual aids should be used really as an aid for the recipient, for the audience, rather than for an aid for the speaker. And I think that's firstly the big mistake that people make, is they use it as their notes. Whereas I have no problem with people using notes, but have them there in a way that helps.
So, for example, if someone was announcing free school books in the budget, that's all you need to see on that slide. And the minutiae can be explained by the speaker, but you don't need to put it up on the slide.
Precisely. Yale did a study into PowerPoint called The Cognitive Style of PowerPoint by a genius called Edward Tufte, and it discovered really three things. That PowerPoint is presenter-friendly, which it often is. People use it as their notes, as we've discussed. It distracts the audience was the second thing. And then the third thing was that it erodes significance and understanding, as in it gets in the way. So I think PowerPoint often gets thrown in there because people think they'll look unprepared if they don't have it. Whereas the question always has to be, how will this help the audience's understanding rather than help your memory? A very simple principle when using it is just don't put it up until you want your audience to look at it. But I think fundamentally what we're trying to do is have an audience engaged. The big hope for if it's at a wedding speech or if it's at a work event is, please God, don't let me be bored. That's the big hope. And that if it's interesting and relevant, but that comes back to the root of, do you know who you're talking to?
Yeah. What about the place of humour in speeches?
I think it can be great if you're funny. And I don't mean to be funny by that, but humour has so many variables within a path, whether it's the age of the people you're talking to, the gender, the demographics, all come into that. But humour can be a fantastic way of lightening the mood, getting a message within the joke, for example. And when we're working with clients and they're trying to incorporate humour in, it's often good to have a key point coming in after it, should the joke fail. Again, anecdotes, stories. So for example, you talk about a wedding speech. You would hope that the father, the bride, the mother, the groom, the best man, that they would have stories incorporated within it, for example, that might be humorous, but also are memorable and give us a sense of the couple, for example, in question.
Yeah. The use of video or other visual aids, you know, you might make a joke about something or other or something that went wrong, and then you pop up a slide of Boris Johnson.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
You're guaranteed a laugh, at least, you know.
Yeah, and we work with a fashion label, for example, who we encourage them to bring in different textures. A texture could be the garment, for example, but also the texture could be a PowerPoint slide, a visual. It could could be a flip chart. But these are all ways of adding value and adding value to it. I'd love to say I came up with this concept, but if you go way back to the schools of rhetoric more than 2,000 years ago and read Cicero, for example, Cicero said that the perfect speaker had the perfect combination of three things: substance, technique and passion. And I think when you look at anything that you're trying to deliver, do you have the substance to back up your thesis? Do you have the technique to make it interesting, understandable and memorable? And then can you deliver it with a level of enthusiasm that's appropriate for the
fourth one, brevity.
Well, that's it. Be bright, be brief and be gone.
Now, some of the questions coming in. How much of the best man's speech should be about me? That's from Tony, who's going to be a best man.
Well, very little should really be about the person necessarily speaking. I would have thought that for a best man speech, what you're trying to have is content really around the groom and the bride, or the groom and the groom, whatever the relationship is, because that idea of being able to focus on them and give people a sense of them. And then stories are crucial. Like, we use stories throughout all of our communication. Again, you look at religions, for example, they've figured out the best way of communicating their moral and their message is through the use of story. The Good Samaritan, the Prodigal Son, within a best man speech, you could apply a similar version.
Yeah. How do I tell my good friend that his speech is boring?
I would say it's pretty, that could be a way of just saying it, Pat, that it is boring. But ultimately, but how do you make it interesting?
He'll no longer be your good friend, I suspect.
Well, part of it is, I think you can be more constructive. And what are the reasons for it? Is it boring because of the delivery, or is it the content? And within the content, if you can weave in stories, for example, you know, when you look at anybody preparing for a speech during the summer, whether it's for a wedding, what you'd be driving for is, can you give us an example or a story of what you're talking about?
I have to give a speech and I don't mind. I'm keen to do it, but when it comes to it, I blush and I feel short of breath. How do I avoid this?
Well, on the breathing part, a number of our clients would use a technique where you're trying to get your breathing down to about 6 breaths a minute into the tummy in advance of it, for example. That can be very helpful. But even on the preparing for a piece of public speaking, the best way to prepare is actually practicing it out loud, out loud, out loud, out loud. Yeah. So I set clients, for example, a target of 6 times out loud to get comfortable with it. It doesn't have to be the same way every time, but that gives a verbal familiarity with the content. I find it interesting that people go in to predictable public speaking things without having practiced the action. A musician, for example, wouldn't go on stage without having practiced the tune. I don't think people should get up on stage and deliver a presentation or a speech without having practiced it.
I need a confidence tip for speaking in a court case. Now, that's a different environment.
It's a different environment, but again, perhaps that some of the areas that you may be quizzed on may be relative predictable. Like a job interview, again, for example, you can predict what you're going to be asked. And given we can predict the questions of a job interview, I find it interesting, again, that people don't plan and prepare their answers, which again uses a lot of the devices and techniques we've been talking
about. I mean, one of the problems is that the barristers and the judge, they're utterly at home in that environment, and ordinary people come into the court and it's quite intimidating.
Very much so. And that's, I think, is again part of the challenge with public speaking generally, that people are relatively unfamiliar with doing it.
If I was going to the court for the first time ever, I'd go down to the courts and watch someone else's case being run just for an hour
around.
Or two.
Yeah, that's it. And that idea of getting a handle on the setting is very helpful, where people would have spoken about, you know, well-known speakers like Tony O'Reilly, for example, entering into going to the location the night before or first thing in the morning to get a handle on the space. Yeah. So having an idea of where you're going to be and what it's going to look like can be incredibly helpful.
My husband has been asked to be a best man for a wedding next year. He's already dreading it and thinking of asking his friend to pick someone else. But I know deep down he does not want to let his friend down. Any advice on how he can overcome his nerves? And the thing is, he has a speech ready. It's wonderfully funny and I'd love him to shine on the day and to actually enjoy it.
Well, I think that's, well, first of all, if the content is ready to go, that's the heavy lifting part done, because people are saying, gosh, well, what will I say? What I would advise is just finding different opportunities to practice it out loud, whether that's walking through your house in the car, saying it to a friend or family, getting again familiar with it. Even the actual physical act, though, of standing up and delivering it rather than sitting down. Some clients would get a bottle of water because it's like holding a microphone. Yeah. Even that can be an unusual thing for us to experience, holding something up to our mouth when speaking. So that could be a couple of things that person could try out.
And next one, I'm speaking at my brother's wedding as best man next year. I'm on the fence Whether to go for a funny speech or a sincere one, what's the call here? I've been witness to many an unintended humorous best man speech that simply did not land.
Sincerity is the safer bet, again, if you're unsure on whether your humour will land. But crucially, I think, in any communication, saying, well, what do I want people to know and understand after this? And in this case, where we're talking about somebody's brother, for example, there may be, again, stories in there that show how kind they are, but also that could be relatively humorous at the same time.
Yeah, and ad-libbing can work on the day, because as someone who's recently had to do the Father of the Bride speech, you have to get the mood on the day.
On the day, you're dead right. Churchill had a line that said, some of my best off-the-cuff remarks took me weeks to prepare, so that it can appear off-the-cuff, but that in fact you've crafted it and thought about it. But you'll notice probably there's a couple of key things that I've looped back on a few times, Pat. The use of story is hugely powerful, but even that idea then of how would I like to say it and practicing it out loud can help you get the pitch right.
Yeah, another one. I've always found talking to a group nerve-wracking, even on Teams, speaking on Teams, never mind doing it in person. When I get nervous, I talk fast and I ramble on. I'd love an advice to calm me down and get my voice and breathing under control. That's from Amanda.
Yeah, looking at your piece of presentation, that's something that many people find. Pace of speech doesn't tend to be the issue. It tends to be the pace of ideas, that actually people can stay with you if it's quite a linear point that you're making, that they're going, right, okay, I'm stuck on this. Where pace tends to become a problem is where we move from idea to idea to idea to idea. So the advice that I would give, I think it was Amanda you mentioned, would be to pause between the chunks of information rather than necessarily trying to slow her speech.
Do you have a view on the use of notes during a speech? And for a lot of the informal speeches we're talking about here, best man speeches and so on, people are wondering, do I have to kind of learn this off by heart, or can I use notes, or do people think ill of me if I have to refer to notes to talk about my brother or whoever it might be?
Oh gosh, no, I think notes can be incredibly helpful. The thing is that the notes should be there to help you perform well rather than distract you. So for example, I was working with somebody last week who had notes, but that the notes were written like a written document. So when they looked at the page, there were 300 words on it in point 12. And so that you might be lashing into the presentation or the speech, and then you try and look at your notes and you don't know where you are. So what can be very helpful is putting down trigger words or key areas that at a glance, you know, okay, I can be coherent on this for 2 minutes. That can be very helpful. But again, no more than I've been saying as well, is practicing with your notes and using them in the way that you'd like to.
So if you have a story about the groom falling off a table in a pub late one night, you just have to put pub table.
Precisely.
And that triggers the tale.
The anecdote, exactly. And that can be very helpful. So notes can be very useful. It's more that they should be there to help you rather than to hinder you.
All right. And the main thing, say, if you can, construct it in a way that you will enjoy delivering it. Owen Thomas McDermott, Managing Director of the Communications Clinic, thank you very much. And that's all we have time for. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts. You can listen to them on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.